stories from different parts of the world on The Lantern.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. In the name of Allah. Welcome to this episode of Lantern. We have a nice story today. A great leader. Having suffered from an almost long illness, the founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, the late Imam Khomeini, traveled to Allah. With the demise of Hazrat Imam, destiny was materialized. The leader had not accepted a post unless it was a divine duty. Ayatollah Khamenei says, "I did not expect, even for a second in my life, what happened in the process of being elected as a new leader, in which this responsibility was put on my shoulder as a humble and weak servant of Allah. If someone thinks that it occurred to me even for a second at the time of a struggle, later during the revolution, or during my term of presidency, that this responsibility would be delegated to me, he is wrong. I always considered my level too low to accept not only this highly significant and crucial post, but also much lower posts like presidency and other posts, which I held during the revolution. Of course, we had very sensitive hours, the most serious hours of our lives. Frequently, they talk about me as a member of leadership council, though I rejected it in my mind. However, it was possible that they would delegate it to me. Finally, after some debates and talks in the assembly of experts, they voted for me. There I tried, debated, and reasoned to prevent the vote, but they voted. Even now, I consider myself as a common religious student without any outstanding feature or special advantage, not only for this great office of significant responsibility, as I said sincerely, but also for much less important ones like presidency, delegated to me during that 10 years. However, now that they voted for me to bear its burden and responsibility, I accept it vigorously, similar to what Allah advised His prophets, take it rigorously. To discharge it vigorously to extent I can, as divine duty corresponds to one's ability, I entreat Allah's help so I would maintain the great status of this office. This is my duty, and I hope, if Allah wants, to be exposed to His blessing and mercy and to be one of those for whom Wali Asr, Imam Mahdi, may Allah make his reappearance sooner, and pious believers pray. Thank you for joining us, and I invite you to listen to the continuation of this episode of Lantern and important point about this story.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam Muhammad and his purified progeny. Dear brothers and sisters, today we are going to talk about the leadership, the characteristics and qualifications of a successful leader. According to the verses of the Holy Quran and the hadith and narrations, the qualities and characteristics of leadership can be deduced. So let's refer to some of these qualities. One important quality of leadership is knowledge. The leader of the Islamic society must have a worthy knowledge to resolve political and social issues by discerning divine laws. An Islamic leader or an Islamic scholar is someone who in the position of ijtihad, has knowledge of the rules of Islam based on the Quran and the traditions of the Holy Prophet and Imams, that is the Sunnah, the conduct of the Holy Prophet and his successors, in order to implement religious rules and regulations in the society by this knowledge that he has it. The next quality of a leader in an Islamic environment, in an Islamic context, is faith and belief. An important and basic condition for ruling over the Muslim community is fully belief and faith in the foundations of Islam. Faith and belief for leadership is a comprehensive faith that includes heart knowledge, ma'rifatul qalb, verbal confession, iqrarun bil lisan, and practical commitment to the pillars of Islam. So the next quality that we are going to talk about, the next quality among the qualities of an Islamic leader is ethics, meaning justice and piety. The Islamic ruler must be a just person. The Islamic ruler must be a just person and implement social and economic justice in the society. The Holy Quran does not accept anything but justice to lead the society. Imam Ali alayhi salam says, "Know that the best of God's servants in the eyes of God is a righteous imam who himself is guided and leads others to guidance as well." So we see and we understand that justice and piety are the main qualities of leadership. The Lantern.
Under the light of lantern, we'll look at the story, which indicates a moral aspects of our life.
The next quality of a successful leader, or let's say a divine leader, or let's say an Islamic leader, is political awareness. Leadership and governorship is a series of matters, and the leader's familiarity and awareness of political issues is necessary in a world where the enemies of Islam are trying to weaken the Muslim community. Familiarity with politics and the power of political analysis allows the leader to make the necessary decisions at any time according to the requirements. The existence of some outstanding qualities for a leader can be called political tact and wisdom, which can be used to make a competent decision. So there are times that he needs to make a very strong decision. And so having this knowledge is, let's say, prerequisite here. So again, having this knowledge, but not having courage and ability to manage, which is the next quality that I'm going to talk about, again, would be in vain. So the next quality of an Islamic leader is courage and ability to manage. And so it is necessary for a leader to have courage and the ability to manage those important decisions to be made. Important political and military decisions are at critical times require wise and courageous determination to save the society from wandering. So the power of management is another trait that the leader has it. So in case the leader actually owns this power of management, he can create coherence in the government and organize affairs properly. So these qualities, along with other leadership qualities that we didn't have the chance to talk about, can complete the leadership qualities. So since we are approaching the end of this show, I think we have to say goodbye to the brothers and sisters who have been listening to this show, and we have been talking about the leadership and the importance of the leadership in an organization. And then we move to the definition, referred to the leadership in an Islamic, let's say, environment, and the qualities of an Islamic leader. So I hope that you find this show beneficial, and I'd like to invite you to listen to us in our upcoming sessions, where we shall talk about some other issues. Till then, I'll leave in Allah's protection. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Thank you.
that was all for today. Thank you very much for joining us. Inshallah, we continue this topic on the next episode. Till then, may Allah bless all of you. Fi amanillah.
أنا بذكر الله تطمئن القلوب.
In the limelight.
In Britain, there are clear signs of recession, with gross domestic product estimated to have fallen by 0.6% in the month of September. We take a look at the British media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Sun has more for us. In Britain, the economy shrunk by 0.2% between July and September, new figures have revealed, as experts warn the country is heading for recession. The Office for National Statistics said that gross domestic product, or GDP, had fallen by 0.6% in September. Gross domestic product, or GDP, measures the value of goods and services produced in the United Kingdom. It also estimates the size of and growth in the economy. The Office of National Statistics said the figures may have been affected by the bank holiday for the state funeral of Queen Elizabeth II. This is because some businesses closed or operated shorter hours for the day as a mark of respect. It could be the beginning of a recession, which is defined as two quarters of shrinking gross domestic product GDP in a row. But in the last quarter, April to June, the economy grew unexpectedly by 0.2%. This means the economy would need to shrink again in the next quarter for the country to formally enter a recession. Manufacturing was also down in the 3 months to September. Office for National Statistics Director of Economic Statistics, Darren Morgan, said, with September showing a notable fall partly due to the effects of the additional bank holiday for the Queen's funeral, overall economy shrank slightly in the third quarter. The quarterly fall was driven by manufacturing, which saw widespread declines across most industries. Services were flat overall, but consumer-facing industries fared badly with a notable fall in retail. Today's figures come just a week after the Bank of England warned that the United Kingdom could be facing the longest recession in the past 100 years. However, the Bank of England itself cautioned that this would only happen if it raises interest rates to around 5.2%, which the market was expecting at the time. But it doesn't expect interest rates to reach such a high level now, which would imply that the recession could be less drawn out. Responding to the figures, Chancellor Jeremy Hunt said, there is a tough road ahead that will require extremely difficult decisions. Hunt said, to achieve long-term sustainable growth, we need to grip inflation, balance the books, and get debt falling. There is no other way. While the world economy faces extreme turbulence, the fundamental resilience of the British economy is cause for optimism in the long run. In less than a week, Jeremy Hunt will unveil the government's autumn statement, a budget that will have huge implications for your pocket. The Bank of England uses gross domestic product as one of the key indicators when it sets the base interest rate. Last week, it unveiled the biggest interest rate rise since the 1980s, increasing interest rates to 3%. The hike is usually passed on to consumers in the form of higher interest rates on mortgages and other borrowing. Savers could earn more on the cash they have in their accounts, though banks are usually slower to pass on a rate increase on savings. Alice Hain, personal finance analyst at Best Invest, said, as we head into winter and a potentially long, drawn-out recession, consumers are right to be fearful of bleak times ahead. She added, food inflation rose by 14.6% on the year to September, while those remortgaging now are facing monthly repayments hundreds of pounds higher. A scaled-back Christmas will be crucial for those whose budgets are already squeezed to the max. The British newspaper The Financial Times has also covered the same story. Britain's economy contracted during the third quarter as it shrank more than expected in September, suggesting the country has entered what is forecast to be a prolonged recession. Gross domestic product, or GDP, fell 0.6% between August and September, the Office for National Statistics said on Friday. A larger drop than the 0.4% forecast by economists polled by the Reuters news agency. Output fell 0.2% between the second and third quarters, the first such contraction in more than a year. Economists had expected shrinkage of 0.5%. Britain's economy is now 0.2% smaller than it was in February of 2020, immediately prior to the COVID pandemic. Other major economies, including the United States, Germany and France, have grown above pre-pandemic levels. Sanjay Raja, economist at Deutsche Bank, said the UK gross domestic product contraction in the third quarter was a result of continued weakness in household and business confidence, higher inflation and higher interest rates in the economy. The Bank of England last week forecast that the third quarter would be the start of a long recession lasting up to 2 years, as a central bank raises interest rates to curb high inflation. The latest gross domestic product figures provided a difficult backdrop to next week's autumn statement, in which the Chancellor of the Exchequer, Jeremy Hunt, is expected to tighten fiscal policy despite the economic downturn. Jeremy Hunt is considering tax rises and public spending cuts worth up to £55 billion a year to try to fill a gaping hole in the public finances and restore financial markets' confidence in the UK after Liz Truss's ill-fated premiership. Her mini-budget involved £45 billion of unfunded tax cuts, most of which Jeremy Hunt has pledged to reverse after Liz Truss's plans roiled the markets. Jeremy Hunt said, I'm under no illusion that there is a tough road ahead, one which will require extremely difficult decisions to restore confidence and economic stability. But to achieve long-term sustainable growth, we need to grip inflation, balance the books, and get debt falling. There is no other way.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Islamadi. Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Dear listeners, sisters and brothers from all around the world, you're listening to me from RRIB English Radio, and this is Youth Station. I am Bita, a medical student at your service, and today I have the pleasure to have Brother Muzaffar with me. Hello, brother. How are you doing?
Assalamu alaikum, sister.
Choo-choo-ka-choo. It's the youth station for you. Why does nobody do that? They hold back and then they
okay, go on. As the way you like.
These are a few of my favorite things. What? You know that song?
No.
No? It's from some old movie. But what are some of your favorite things, sister?
Actually, it's somehow so vast, you know, your question is so vast to answer, but there are many things that I like. One of them is traveling. As you know, even traveling is suggested in our religion that there is a verse that says you go and see the world and how God Almighty created the first creation.
Yeah.
And I love traveling because when you travel and go see the world and the cultures, everything, you know, it feels like you are a little part of this universe. You are nothing. And this feeling of being nothing always seems something really valuable to me, and this is one of my favorite things to do, go around the world, see other people, and you know, different colors, different languages, and so on, which makes me really excited. You know,
I used to love traveling. I hate traveling now.
Why?
I can't stand traveling. Well, first 9/11 happened, so then there was a whole terrorist thing, and then you were always scared to go in the airport because, you know, you're going to be looked at like you're some sort of criminal.
Yeah.
And then Corona happened, and it made it so many times more worse.
It was a disaster.
Oh, God. And you know, now if anybody even mentions traveling, it just makes me cringe because you have to think about the vaccine passport and everything.
You have a negative perspective on that.
I would
You're
rather
really bothering
just
me.
Walk. Yeah, well, you know.
So don't go to airport. Go see your own country. Here, we have many beautiful places to see.
I guess so.
What is the problem with that?
I don't have a car.
Right. So, I don't know. This is your problem, actually.
Okay.
I don't like to talk about. I love traveling and I won't change my mind.
All right. I'm not trying to change your opinion. But no, that's good. Traveling is definitely a good thing. And you're right. Islam does recommend it. What other things are your favorite things?
Language.
Language?
Yeah, learning a new language is one of my favorite hobbies, you know, in this life.
Are you serious?
I am serious about that because whenever I go through learning another language, it's like opening a new window to the world, actually. Because, first of all, I love the pronunciations. When I try to pronounce different words that doesn't exist in my own language, in my mother tongue, it feels like I'm doing something really cool. It may look silly for you. I don't care.
No, it's fine. I mean, I think that's a brilliant thing as well. What languages? Because when I was back in school, they forced us to study French, and I didn't really like it.
Why? Come on, French is so sweet, I think.
It has a feminine and masculine for everything. Granted, Arabic has that as well. And,
but for
Arabic, it's worth it because, you know, it's Arabic. It's the language of Islam. But French, like, bonjour, je m'appelle.
Come on, you cannot talk about that in this way because I love it because it's literature.
What the heck? What languages did you enjoy?
Actually, the first one was French that I really enjoyed most because...
Ça va?
Yeah, ça va bien. Because, you know what?
Très bien.
When I was a child, I liked the book Le Petit Prince or The Little Prince by Saint-Antoine d'Exupéry, which was really interesting for me when I was a little child. It sounds really, you know, magical, mysterious with all those elements. I didn't have the correct sense of understanding the literature of that book at that age. But when I just grew older, I understood that there is a deep meaning behind that story. And it was really nice for me that what could be the actually mother tongue of this book would be.
Yeah.
And because of that reason, I went to French classes and I learned French to read Le Petit Prince in French. And
it's actually brilliant. We got journeying, traveling, and we got learning languages. What other things
Tell me about yourself. Why only me?
That's so simple. I'm a simple guy. I like chocolate. I like cake. I like sweets.
Painting.
I love
slim.
Painting.
Come on.
And
I love
going to breaks. I love break time. So we're going to just go for a short break and we'll see you after, inshallah.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Welcome back to the studio. We're talking about our favourite things. So Sister said some brilliant things, which were journeying, travelling and learning languages. And I said some pretty simple things. You know, I like chocolate and I like break times and I like just
But our dear listeners are in here to see you, that you're service thing, that I cannot understand that you like this sort of thing. Because this sort of thing will make you a fat person, I'm sure. And I cannot, you know, just handle this.
I like painting.
Me too.
There's something called, right? You like painting?
Yeah, of course.
I love painting. Watercolors?
No, painting? Not like that. Not that. Only black and white.
Black. Oh, okay. I like drawing as well. I like writing. I can write all night if my kids and wife let me. my family, they're part of my favorite things. COI Radio. I love IRIB English Radio. Yeah, I've got lots of favorite things.
Thank you. That's a real amount of things.
Okay, now the crux of the discussion. Which of these favorite things makes your life more easy or more tolerable?
I don't like the word tolerable, first of all. At first, I want to tell you that. What does that mean, more tolerable?
Because you're tolerating life.
No, I'm not tolerating life. I'm living life.
It's because you're young. Life. Okay, you don't have
experience. I don't like
experience,
that sentence.
Right?
Don't talk.
You don't know
don't talk
about
to me like that. You're
the
wrong
realities,
or
the dark realities of this life, all right? You need to find ways to make life more tolerable as you get older and you realize how sinister this place really is.
This is why I think when you grow older, you're like, okay, everything is bad. You don't know anything about the difficulties of life. And because of that, you have to grow older, then you will understand that life is just a kind of thing that you have to tolerate it. Oh, come on. And this nagging, I hate it, because no matter what, but I will always be positive about this matter. I'm not a positive person.
Do you know Imam Khomeini, the leader, he actually said that the idealistic vision that the youth have is a very good thing and they need to maintain it. And if you notice, there are certain traits of that youthful attitude towards life, the universe and everything that great people like Imam Khomeini and others as well have actually maintained even in their old age. They never became cynical like I'm expressing right now.
Like you are.
I am. do you know the youths of the cave? You know, Ashab al-Kahf from the Surah
story.
Of the Quran, right? They're referred to as the youths of the cave. Why does it refer to them as youths? Part of the secret is this attitude that they had, you know? Even at that old age, they didn't say, oh, society is broken. Forget it. There's nothing we can do. They said, no, okay, we're going to go to a cave. They're going to travel. If they have to learn a new language, they're going to learn a new language. They're going to do whatever it takes. They're going to go to that cave so that they can be free of the shirk of the society and actually serve Allah alone. I mean, that's just beautiful. But coming back to reality for a moment, life sucks and you need a way to
bear
it.
What does that mean, even? Even in my most difficult times, I've never said such a thing about life.
Sister, this is so funny. I'm sorry. Your most difficult time in life.
You are laughing.
What experience have you had so far?
Come on.
You know nothing of the difficulties of life.
No, it doesn't mean I know nothing. It doesn't mean that I don't have them. I have a lot of difficulties. I had experienced some difficulties in my life. And go to the first question that you asked me, that what are the most actually favorite things in this life that I like to do to make my life easier. One of them is making plan for the future. I like it.
Enjoy making plans for the future. I can't pretend that's okay.
You
making
really
plans. You enjoy making plans for the future. Okay, when I think about the future, I get filled with this deep, dark dread, and I just think, okay, Muzaffar, just take it one day at a time. Which world does she come from? I have three kids. I have all sorts of things to worry about, and I'm just like, okay, just take it one day at a time. We're going to make it.
Yeah, I know that. Maybe, for example, more responsibilities mean that you just don't like to think about future anymore. But because I have a strong imagination somehow, I like to think about future and making plans for that. Maybe sometimes I feel like I'm so ambitious, but I like it even about myself.
Wait. I'm going to come back to that because I'm really curious to understand what
kind of
things...
I won't talk about my plans.
It's really good to have a youth on the show who has a very youthful outlook as well. So I was having a discussion a while back with an uncle, mm-hmm. right? And he's like, I guess, 20, 30 years older than me.
Oh, my gosh.
And I was asking him about the future and mm-hmm. the zuhur of Imam Zaman and the world that we're going to build, inshallah, where there's going to be no poverty. You know, people are going to be looking for somebody to give charity to, and they're not going to find anybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's such a beautiful world that a woman will be able to walk from one side of the world to another side unaccompanied, and she'll be completely safe.
Yeah.
That's unheard of. But that's the kind of world that we're building, a world of safety, of justice, of peace, of tolerance, of respect. It's just so beautiful, right?
It is.
So I was talking to him about these things, and he said, it's not going to happen. And He just flat out, he's like, come on, it's just in our lifetime, definitely not. And maybe in a...
He
had that kind of really negative outlook, right?
Yeah.
And I was just flabbergasted because I was like, well, we're supposed to believe in these things. That's what our iman is. And this was not a secular person in any way. He was a religious person. He'd come here for ziyarah and everything. But he still had that negative outlook of the future. He just couldn't believe it. It's like in Iran, you know, in the time of the Shah, on our way down here, the taxi driver was telling me how, you know, it was so weird. People, my mum used to tell me, before the revolution, he was saying that his mum used to tell him not to go out after 6 p.m. because, you know, you could get stabbed, you could get killed. There was no real safety. And I was like, wow, that's what the West is like. And nobody could have believed that the revolution would happen. And here we are 40 years later, right? So... part of our faith is to believe in the impossible almost. But I want to come back to your idea of the future. What do you actually think about that gives you happiness and hope of the future? And how does that make you...
About myself, actually. Yeah. I'm not a selfish person, but mm-hmm. I think I have the potential to change what I want to change. I don't want to change the world. I don't want to change the people. I don't want to change myself. You know, it's not like change first yourself and then you would be the change in the world. No, I don't like that much kind of cliches or something. But I think if I try my best, I will do something for humanity. And, you know, I'm searching for that. Maybe that is somehow so ambitious to believe or something. I want to believe in that, that I can do it. And, you know, because I want to do it, there is kind of motivation in me that always it was there. And one of the reasons that I've chosen this way, I mean, a medication or something, medical sciences actually, that this is a kind of touchable way to change the world, you know. There are many ways actually, from religion parts to even scientific parts, mathematics or something. But this was what I want about the future.
May Allah give you success, inshallah.
Thank
May
you.
He give you extraordinary help.
My pleasure.
You are going to face difficulties, and the very, very important thing which you've reminded me of is to hold on to that dream that you have up until the very end. Remember the story of Prophet Yusuf, right?
Yeah.
He was given that dream, he was given that vision of the future, and straight after he's thrown in the well, then he's put into a prison, then he has to go through all sorts of trials and problems and issues, but he never lets go. And that's really what it's all about. Unfortunately, we've run out of time, and inshallah, we'll discuss more in the future.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
In the United States, Republicans hope to achieve the most powerful victory in American history and to be able to take control of both the House of Representatives and the Senate. But their popularity has waned. Political experts blame former U.S. President Donald Trump for this situation and say by choosing incompetent candidates and his opposition to some popular candidates, the Republicans were unable to create a red wave and to win control of both houses of Congress. We've taken a look at some of the world media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. The New York Times has more for us. Incomplete results from midterm elections in the United States show that the Republican Party is ahead in both the Senate and the House of Representatives, but has performed far more poorly than it has been expected to. Following the election and according to results so far, 49 seats at the Senate are now held by Republicans, compared to 48 by Democrats. And 207 U.S. representatives are Republican, compared to 189 who are Democratic. As such, Republicans are certain to gain the majority in the House of Representatives, even as vote counting continues. But the race for the majority in the Senate is as yet undecided. Votes for Nevada and Arizona are still being counted, and a tight race in Georgia has officially headed for a December 6th runoff. The Georgia runoff could mean that control of the upper chamber might not be decided for weeks. The Republicans were forced to celebrate a much smaller victory than they had anticipated, even though they appeared to have secured the majority at the House and may do so at the Senate as well. Republicans failed to deliver on a big red wave that was supposed to sweep the country with a base roused by former President Donald Trump. The New York Times called that performance an underwhelming finish. The narrow Republican victory was also soured when conservatives, dismayed by many missed opportunities, began to publicly attack Donald Trump for his toxic leadership of the party, including on Fox News Channel, the former president's favorite television network, and the one mostly associated with his vision of the Republican Party. David Urban, a longtime Donald Trump advisor, said Republicans have followed Donald Trump off the side of a cliff. And Peter King, a former Republican representative who has long supported Trump, said, "I strongly believe he should no longer be the face of the Republican Party." Chris Christie, a former governor of New Jersey, told ABC News, "Almost every one of these Trump-endorsed candidates that you see in competitive states has lost. It's a huge loss for Trump." Some even called for him to hold off plans to run a third presidential campaign in 2024. The Republican performance may have been one of the weakest by an out-of-power party against the first-term presidents in decades. Meanwhile, The Hill newspaper has more for us on the same story. Former U.S. President Donald Trump's critics and the Republican Party have asked him to stay away from the runoff election in Georgia, blaming him for the disappointing performance in last Tuesday's vote. Senate Republicans are worried that Donald Trump may derail the GOP party's chances of winning the runoff election in Georgia next month by either casting doubt on the legitimacy of the midterm elections or announcing his plan for the 2024 presidential election. Donald Trump on Monday, 7th of November, announced that he would make a big announcement on 15th of November at his Mar-a-Lago resort in Palm Beach, Florida. Meanwhile, Republicans are concerned that the Georgia runoff between Senator Raphael Warnock, a Democrat, and the Republican candidate Herschel Walker could turn into a referendum on Trump that will likely result in a loss that could cost them control of the U.S. Senate. As things stand, Republicans will control at least 49 Senate seats next year, compared to 48 by Democrats, which means they need to win two of the three unresolved races in Georgia, Arizona, and Nevada to gain the Senate majority in 2023. However, the House of Representatives majority went to the Republicans. The results from the midterm elections on Tuesday showed that the Republican Party had performed far more poorly than it was expected to perform. In the meantime, Donald Trump continues to push his claims that the 2020 presidential election was stolen from him and has demanded that the candidates he supports embrace his views, though he has failed to back them with any proof. WISN Television, a television station in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, has also covered the same story. Former U.S. House Speaker Paul Ryan believes the Republican Party would have had better results on Election Day if former President Donald Trump wasn't involved in the election campaign. Paul Ryan said on Thursday, 10th of November, that his party is suffering from a Trump hangover. He said the former president's continued prominence on the national political scene is causing problems for Republican candidates, adding, Republicans didn't see that red wave like they were predicting. Following the election on Tuesday, 8th of November, and according to the results so far, the race for the majority in the U.S. Senate is still undecided. Paul Ryan, who had an uneasy relationship with Donald Trump during his time in the House leadership, said that Trump's kind of a drag on our ticket. I think Donald Trump gives us problems politically. He added, we lost the House, the Senate and the White House in 2 years when Trump was on the ballot or in office. Paul Ryan also suggested that Trump will not get the Republican presidential nomination in 2024. He said, we want to win. We want to win the White House and we know that Donald Trump was so much more likely to lose. Trump, who has given every indication that he will launch another bid for the White House in 2024, has claimed he lost the 2020 election because of widespread election fraud. The former president and his right-wing allies have already started casting doubt on the legitimacy of last Tuesday's midterm elections. The Democrats were surprised. U.S. President Joe Biden, the fate of whose presidency is at serious risk because of Republican victory, celebrated the results nevertheless. Even though the Republicans' narrow margin in the House could upend his legislative agenda, Joe Biden said, it was a good day for democracy and I think a good day for America. The potential control of the Senate would give Republicans the power to block Joe Biden's nominees for judicial and administrative posts. President Biden said, our democracy has been tested in recent years, but with their votes, the American people have spoken and proven once again that democracy is who we are. He added, while the press and the pundits are predicting a giant red wave, it didn't happen.
This is
this
for
is
a better life.
For a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, "I have been sent to complete noble manners."
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to a new episode of For a Better Life. You are listening to IRB English Radio. This is Asma. I'm studying literature, and it's been quite a while that I come here to share my ideas with you. Not as a lecturer, of course, but as someone who is just as eager as everyone out there to find the road to a better life, which is actually the essence of our existence. Anyway, I hope everything is just fine with you and you're doing well. Now, every single session, as the ritual of this program, we talk about something important related to us, human beings. And today we will have some perspectives on broad-mindedness and a struggle against luxuries and a splendor of life. Well, it might sound like a session to a far-fetched, pious life that is pretty difficult to achieve, but that is just not the truth. Well, we might have this idea that these sort of things that we talk about are just for pious, holy, sacred men of God. Maybe it is, but let's penetrate through it and find out the truth together. To live a life, we have some basic needs like shelter to protect us from the cold of winter or the heat of summer, food for our body to move on, perfect clothing, and of course, money to provide all of those mentioned issues and stuff. Now, there's no way to ignore these needs, but the problem starts when we get to go so far away, when we get to go to extremes and extravagant demands. This way, the objectives of one's life will change and would form a habit in our nature that is hard to cope up with, in a way that without answering the greed of our inner beast, we'd feel weak, vulnerable, and not worthy of respect. And trust me, that sometimes happens. Now, we usually hear stuff like this and think that, oh, that's the dilemma of the upper class and not me. My car is a random one. I have a small house and a poor pocket, and nothing of that is related to me. But the truth is, we all could fall prey to these mundane things. If I don't buy that certain house, car, even that certain dress, or I don't know, cosmetic issues, whatever, depending on our lifestyle and dreams, you know, it might differ, I'd feel sad and think of life as hell. In fact, all these demands are the chains and shackles that entangle us and turn us into slaves. While adopting a simple life is to revolt against these chains and control the whims and desires that might destroy us. So there's us. There's plenty much of things that we desire to have. And also, there is this thing inside of us that might help us to control it all. Before we go for more on how to live a simple life, let's go for a short break and we'll be back in no time. Welcome back to A Better Life. We're talking about simple life and how to get there, because it's not easy. Well, our role models, who are Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, have always practiced what they preached. They truly are the best examples to follow. Actually, the truth is coming out of whatever they have told us, and the narrations, through the actions they've done, and through the things they've passed down to us. Now, the truth is that we can never live the pious life they practiced, but we can at least do our best. Imam Ali alayhi salam in Nahjul Balagha tells us a lot about the journey of life and how fleeting the moments are, and count these as the main reasons not to get sinked in the shadows of life. He says, This world is a crossway, not a resting place, and people in this crossway are of two types. Some sell and enslave themselves, and this way go to destruction. And some others, on the contrary, redeem and buy themselves out, and this way find freedom and salvation. Somewhere else, regarding the abandonment of pleasures and of the splendors of life, he says, O life, go away from me. I have relieved myself from your claws. I have escaped your traps, and I have evaded your stumbling blocks. Go away from me. I swear to God that I will not surrender to you. You may make me follow you miserably, but I would not give you the rein. I will not let you lead me where you wish. I swear to God that I've made my soul so strong as to be happy with a loaf of bread with some salt as its stew. Imam Sadr alayhi salam also says, piety means the abandonment of anything which separates man from Allah without regretting this abandoning. Now, with all what we said, we come to conclude that whatever that exists in our life as the means of perfect living actually is something that we should not go too extreme for it. What I mean is that, yes, true, as human beings, we have so much of needs, and maybe some of us has some very much big of dreams. And you know how life works out. These splendors are in a way that they would shine in front of you. And this ostensible show of a life that is full of flashing things is always something attracting the attention. But the truth is that we must control it, and it should not stay there forever. The urge to go for those things. You know, after 1 year, 2 years, 3 years of achieving different things, then everything would turn into a banal thing. And it would go just like something that would be so mundane, so not giving you any special feeling.
Please send any suggestion, any idea to our email, that is englishradio@irib.ir.
Even if you go too far for achieving whatever you feel that is needed for your life, then in the end, you're not going to feel satisfied. Because the greed inside human beings has been put there in a way that we will never be satiated with whatever we achieve. So the brain actually would give us through its logic this thought that it's better for us to go for things through much of thinking. And to know that this life is not going to stay forever. I do not mean to say that we should not go for a perfect life. We should not buy different things, or we should not, answer all the needs that we have. No, even our religion does not say that. Even in our religion, we've been asked to work hard in order to achieve whatever that is perfect for our living. But the problem is with going too far away, with going to the extremes. Do not let the flashings of life turn you into a beast that is not having peace in their life, and that is not sleeping the night well just because there is a thought eating them from the inside. So in every single step of our life, we should know that there's an end to this life, and it's not going to be eternal. So whatever we do, we should focus on the very fact not to sell ourselves into this mundane world, because no matter how long it goes, no matter how far away we would live in this world, one day we would never wake up again. I mean, there would be no other days for us to continue. So it is not actually wise to sell ourselves very cheaply. That's all I have to say for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Thank you again for staying with us. Until another session, I bid you farewell. May Allah shower you with his blessings. Thank you again. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash he knows. Every thought I have and every word I share.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
As the war drags on in Ukraine, the gloomy economic outlook continues to trigger protests across Europe. Demonstrators in several European countries have hit the streets for pay rises and better working conditions. In the UK, tens of thousands of nurses will go on a strike for the first time, demanding better pay as the cost of living soars. The industrial action would begin before the end of the year, after the first vote on strike action in its 106-year-old history. Unions say that the salaries of nurses have dropped by up to 20%, in real terms, over the last 10 years. That has left members struggling to feed their families and to pay their bills. Hundreds of workers at London's Heathrow Airport will walk out in the run-up to the Soccer World Cup this month over demands for better pay. These 700 workers will strike for 3 days starting from November 18th. In Greece, workers have held a 24-hour general strike, which has seen thousands of protesters march to the streets of Athens and the northern city of Thessaloniki. Clashes also erupted between protesters and police forces. And the French capital, Paris, commuters have faced transport delays. As metro workers called a major one-day pay strike, unions have staged strikes across several sectors in recent weeks, seeking pay hikes or increased hiring, as spiraling energy costs feed into widespread inflation. The protests come amid a gloomy outlook in Europe as Russia's war in Ukraine takes a rising toll on Europe's economies. The International Monetary Fund has predicted that Europe's advanced economies will grow by just 0.6% next year. It also says that this winter, more than half of the countries in the euro area will experience technical recessions. Germany, which is considered EU's biggest economy, is also expected to go into a recession in the next year.
The German economy has been built on cheap energy, cheap gas from Russia. And this business model is over. So Germany has to fasten to produce renewable energy and then go back on track with its business model. But this will take a couple of years.
Technically, a recession means that at least two consecutive quarters of shrinking output will occur. Next year, Europe's output and income will be nearly half a trillion euros lower as compared to the IMF's pre-war forecasts.
We have downgraded three times since October last year our growth projections. Last time we brought 22 to 3.2% growth, and for 23 projections was 2.9%. We will see, we always come around the annual meetings with our World Economic Outlook, that we are further downgrading our growth projections for next year.
The Eurozone has been battling against surging inflation for about a year. Inflation hit a historic high of 10.7% last month. Given the historic levels of inflation, the European Central Bank has announced three rate hikes this year, bringing the main rate from negative territory to 1.5% currently. Soaring costs with energy have been the main driver of higher inflation across the Eurozone.
Thank you.
from the insurrection in the U.S.